Welcome to another BlindBargains.com exclusive audio podcast brought to you by the AT Guys, your assistive technology experts. Visit ATGuys.com today for all your technology needs. Now, here's J.J. Meadow.
We are here at CSUN 11 with Mick Curran and Jamie Tay, the President, Vice President, Software Developers for NV Access. Did I get that all good in one sentence?
Yep.
And we're here to talk about, of course, NV Access and NVDA. Welcome to Blind Bargains.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Yeah. NVDA, of course, got started a couple of years ago. I'm a little surprised we haven't done a podcast until now. But I know it's certainly come a long way for maybe some of the people who tried out NVDA in its very infancy and, you know, thought it kind of worked for them, but, you know, maybe they haven't tried it out in a couple of years. So why don't you give us a little recap of how the project got started and how it's advanced.
Okay. Well, I guess I'll start as in I was in the middle of a university degree in about 2006, and I got bored with it and wanted to do something else. And, I mean, I was interested in sort of Blind Citizens Australia, sort of, you know, advocacy kind of stuff and all that. And and I wanted some way to merge both my sort of passions of software development and you know, helping the blind community and stuff. So, and at the same time, as a blind user, I didn't want to have to pay thousands of dollars to buy commercial screen reading products. I didn't, you know, believe I had to do that. But at the same time, I believed that blind people needed to advocate for themselves, and if they wanted to do something, they needed to achieve it themselves. So therefore, I thought I would be, you know, able to start a screen reader because, you know, no one else had really succeeded, at least in the free screen reader era at that time.
Right.
Many people had talked about it. No one
a lot of talk.
Right.
And, but a line of code needed to be written. So, and I mean, I had average programming experience back then. I don't know, but and I just sort of started one day, and you know, it was very slow at first, but I kept at it, and then of course, Jamie, you know, longtime friend, and we'd worked on other projects together. Took a little bit of interest in the screen reader and thought it was an interesting project.
Initially, I think I was like, "Yeah, this sounds cool," but
But so it, you know, so we sort of it sort of majorly sped up, when Jamie started on the project as well, and then we started getting some interest from other languages. You know, they wanted to translate, and so you know, it slowly sped up through 2006, but it was really the start of 2007 when the Mozilla Foundation became majorly interested because, you know, they make a Firefox web browser, and they thought that a free screen reader on Windows was a wonderful idea and certainly would help their own philosophy of making a, you know, open web accessible to all. It would majorly help them because, you know, then people could have a free screen reader rather than have to pay thousands of dollars to access the web, you know what I mean?
So, sure.
So maybe, Jamie, you could, I don't know, we can talk about...
So I guess in 2007, it sort of started with Mozilla a bit more so. Well, actually, I should probably mention
CSUN. They got me to, they sent me to CSUN in 2007 for the first time, and that was an amazing experience for me because it was like, whoa, there are people here who think like me. There are people who care about, you know what I mean? You know, I'd never met any of these people or anything, and it was so much energy and everything, and it was just a fantastic feeling to come here. And people even, you know, sort of talking about NVDA and how, where it could go and everything, it was quite amazing to me. So I made lots and lots of connections, and it really, really spurred us on.
Because before that, you were, I mean, basically, you were a virtual unknown, both as far as being in the blindness community.
I guess so. I mean, we'd done a few JAWS scripts and things like that. We'd done Adobe Audition scripts.
Yeah, in the blindness community, we were already... Because both of us worked on the Adobe Audition and Colette Pro scripts.
Okay.
People still send us emails about
them. They do.
Right.
It's crazy.
We go, I don't know. Right. We don't use them.
So we actually were sort of known in that community.
In that, but it was a small,
area. Right. Of the of those users, sure.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. That's right. Because I'd also done JFW Technical, which was a sort of a system to help JAWS scripters look at the application accessibility of their applications. And, and I guess that was actually one of the projects that really started getting me into the whole sort of low level, you know, MSAA and all that kind of stuff you need for screen readers. So,
So beyond that, there was a grant in a smaller grant, but a grant nevertheless from Mozilla to implement. Better support for Firefox. I won't go into the technical details because it's not really that interesting. But basically, that was really the big start of all of that work. And that was, I think, about June?
July, yeah.
And at this stage, Mick was just working on this sort of, I guess, full-time,
but voluntary.
Kind of, do you want me to call it, yeah, voluntary,
it was
full-time.
Voluntary, yeah, voluntary, casual. Full-time. I wasn't in a job or anything
right.
at the time. But, yeah.
And I was working for a company doing internet security stuff.
Sure.
So, I mean, I was working on it when I could, and there were periods where I committed lots of code, and then periods where I stopped, and then I'd go nuts for a few days, and then stop again.
Yeah.
And so, basically, it came to the point where Mick sort of said, "Look, you know, I really love this thing, but in order for it to really go somewhere, you know, we need something else." And so he was invited to the Mozilla Accessibility Summit.
Yeah, I went to a Mozilla Accessibility Summit in Boston in 2007, and that was great to see a lot of the Mozilla folk again after CSUN. But they asked me there, you know, what could we do to really move MBDA forward? And so I said, look, I really need another full-time developer on the project. I'm happy to sort of do it in a sort of half voluntary and have small grants here and there, but I need someone full-time, someone else to look at the code, because when you're developing software, you know, you need more than one person so you can banter over things you know, have review and all that.
It
so
doesn't just double the work.
So I SMS'd Jamie, and it was like 6 o'clock.
He has this
in the
habit of sending me text messages for really important things.
It was like when my children were born, or when I got married and things like that. Oh, by the way, I'm getting married.
You know? I'm like, that's nice.
Rather than ringing, but
so I got this text message at 6 a.m. So how would you like to quit your job and come and work full time for MBDA? And I'm kind of like,
where did this come from?
Where did this come from? This is pretty cool, but wow. So I was like, there's not really any question. I mean, I had to do a bit of internal soul searching and all that sort of stuff, but. In
for a few
end.
Minutes, right?
Well, I mean, security-wise as well, because we, you know, it's like to jump into a big project where someone's offered you a big, large amount of money to do this, but the question is it sustainable?
It won't last for, you know, it might have lasted and...
Sure.
Because you were in a pretty good job at the time as well.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Mm-hmm. But in the end, I was like, I can't, I couldn't live with myself and pass this opportunity. I'm sorry, I'm just, it's going to happen. And funnily enough, you know, everyone around me that was close to me was like, do it, you know. It's mm-hmm. a fantastic opportunity to do it. So I was like, okay, cool.
Right.
So in February 2008, I started working full-time on the project.
Yeah. And so I was still voluntary for quite a while, but I was on a small grant from Mozilla, but I certainly enjoyed doing it. And so this is when we sort of really picked up. Our Firefox support was pretty much complete for Firefox 3, because that's
mm-hmm. showed off at CSUN 2008.
Really come out with a much more accessible browser, which was wonderful, and went to CSUN 2008. Did anything happen before then in November, before the Microsoft thing?
I don't think so.
Not
major.
So then one of the major things was that we were picked up. Microsoft sort of took note and wanted us to improve support in MVDA for Windows 7 and UI automation, but we also threw in Internet Explorer there. We said, we'll do it, but as long as you can fund us to do Internet Explorer as well.
Sure.
So we did that, and that enabled me to finally work full-time paid on the project, which was great, because then I was able to look at my own sort of personal life as well, and, you know, probably set up as a family and have children and things like that with that security. So, you know, so that's pretty much, I mean, you know, we can talk about
that's the
features
part
and things
the
like that, but that's really how it's become stable, I guess.
Mm.
And to this day, so we sort of receive, you know, support sort of from Mozilla, Adobe, that kind of thing, you know, because Adobe also played a major part as well in 2009-10.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, and obviously, you know, I mean, the breadth of the applications and the pace of development over the last couple of years. I mean, you're near over 4,000 revisions now, and that's just what's been just what's been logged.
Yeah, right.
I mean, with, you know, countless contributors. What do you feel is MVDA's biggest strengths compared to other screen readers?
Cost. But quite seriously, that's more important than some people realize, I think.
Yes,
right.
That's right.
Not everyone is in a position where they can afford this stuff, and that's, you know, we can talk about how we want the whole world to use MVDA and whatever, but realistically speaking, our primary motive is to provide something for those that can't afford the alternatives. And therefore, you know, we'd be
but
glad
a full
if,
solution at the same
yeah, exactly,
time.
Yeah,
well.
Exactly, not a half-baked
right.
solution.
Yeah.
So if people... You know, we're not necessarily, it'd be great if people switched, but our primary thing is let's pull people
sure.
that can't use an alternative, and let's give them something that lets them do everything that they want to do, not just half the things they want to do.
And so, I mean, you know, so we can talk about, you know, non-English speaking countries. They have it, you know, even way worse than we think here in terms of, you know, because the commercial screen readers are either two versions behind or there is no translation or it costs double the amount.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's many issues. And even just things like coming to, we came to CSUN in 2008 or something, and I remember a teacher came up with some blind students from a blind school in a, I can't remember what state of the US, but it was a state where funding was pretty poor, and these children had great screen reading software at school, but they could not take it home, and their families couldn't afford, you know, what they really needed. And for them to receive MVDA, they were so, so happy to receive something like that from us. And
it was kind of very validating.
This is why we were able to help. In some way.
Right. The current situation with that related to funding is that you're looking for more.
Yes.
Well, I'm sure, of course, you always are, but
do you think
the expectations of blind people, though, has gotten to the point where they just expect everything for free and maybe sometimes don't realize that it really does cost money to produce this, regardless of whether or not they're paying for it individually? Or?
Perhaps with some. There are some that literally can't afford to contribute.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they're still worthy and they still deserve to have access.
Mm-hmm.
But by the same token, those that do have that access do, I think it's fair to ask them to give something back, regardless, you know, to spend the money doing something, or whether it be donating to MVDA or buying something else, whatever. But I think that you're right to an extent. There's perhaps a certain sense of entitlement. But as I say, there are definitely people that literally cannot afford.
So the model we try to take is the fact that we believe that it's better to, say, fund development of a project such as a screen reader rather than charging the end user. So people, whether they choose to donate to us or organisations, you know, enter into contracts or donate to us, etc., they're really just paying for the development and the sustaining and the growth of the project as a whole. We're not really talking about profits here because we're a non-profit organisation. Therefore, the end user really, if they can't afford it, don't have to worry about it.
Sure,
But at the same time, we don't believe that people have to depend on the state and charity alone, and that's why we love contributions from other blind developers, etc., you know, because believe that if we want a screen reader, well, we can make one.
If you want others to help you, you need to help yourself first.
Yeah.
Sure, right. And I know that's an attitude of a lot of people, because it's a lot easier to say what doesn't work, but you guys are one people that have actually stepped up.
It's a lot easier to whinge about what
doesn't work. Right.
As opposed to actually being productive about it.
Right, exactly. If you guys considered, I know there's been some talk, the possibility of selling add-ons, text-to-speech voices, things like that, is that a possibility, or would that be a way to bring it in some revenue? Or?
Yeah, it's certainly a possibility. I don't know how much revenue it would really, really make, but we know that there's a major push from the community to do that kind of thing, because there are particular text-to-speech software that's not available for individuals, as in you must buy it wholesale, etc., which is a sort of a sad state of the industry, because, you know, for instance, I mean, should we mention...
Oh, yeah.
Talk about Eloquence.
Mm-hmm. Eloquence,
you know,
is
everyone is
example.
Very, you know, majorly popular in the blind community.
Right.
But at the moment, you can only buy Eloquence from one particular company wholesale, so you have to buy like 300 run times. You know, that's impossible for an individual to buy just one copy of it. So someone needs to step in, whether it's us or another organisation, needs to purchase these wholesale, and then we have to resell them. That's just how it is. So we can see that as an opportunity to make a bit of revenue for ourselves. That's a good thing. But it's also a bit annoying that we have to do it, actually, you know, in a sense, because that it's not available already easy enough. But,
sure.
So we are certainly looking into that, and we've had some talks with
We're specifically
people, so
working on the
other
issue.
We are working on the other one. We've heard the users and...
We are trying,
right?
Really,
right? Because the ultimate goal would have an official support for it, and
yes.
I know there's definitely been a lot of back and forth about
it
that lately.
It's definitely not going to be free.
Right.
No, it can't be free for the.
Right.
That has nothing to do with us. It's because we need to buy it ourselves.
Sure, you know. But it would be a reasonable cost.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So, sure. Yeah. Absolutely. It seems like you've also had some pretty good dialogue, especially recently. You got a lot of the Braille display manufacturers on board now, and
yes.
It seems like it's much more now of a an expectation if you're going to put on a new Braille display that you need to make sure that NVDA is getting a driver for you guys? Do they pay for that, or do you? How does that?
We've had varying support from Braille manufacturers. I mean, it varies from simply just talking to us and giving access to their developers, or you know, they want, you know, we just sort of share information, versus maybe a Braille manufacturer actually loaning us or giving us a Braille display to make sure that we upkeep the driver.
To give you some solid examples, it started with Handutech.
Really. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They were the first to jump on board with NVDA, and they actually contributed some of the initial design. I ended up writing the code myself, but they contributed some of the initial ideas for the design of Braille support in NVDA, and also a driver for the Handutech displays.
Yeah.
Beyond that, then Optilec, were they the next?
Yeah, yes. I think so. Yeah,
because you wrote a driver for Freedom Scientific.
I did myself. That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Optilec got involved, and they actually wrote the driver and provided us with a display on as I understand it, pretty much permanent loan.
Yeah,
on the condition that we keep the driver up to date, and which, you know, I've done. You know, I've made sure that it's always up to date with our code. And that was a big help to us. I mean, it's really useful, in particular, to be able to test. It's pretty much impossible to develop a driver without having a display to work with.
Sure. And Optilec, I think, were important because they were, for us, the first portable Braille display driver, which means you can walk up to any system.
Just plug in the Braille display and
it'll work.
Well, and the advancement of support for HID seems to have helped. That has sort of helped the Braille display thing as well. More recently, do you have support yet for the Braille Pen 12 or some of the newer displays that are coming out? Or?
I haven't seen the Braille Pen 12 yet. Is that APH?
No, the APH is a refresher Braille.
Oh, that's refresher Braille, my bad.
No, the Braille Pen 12. I know Handutech is selling it, and as well as Flying Blind and a couple others.
I haven't seen we do now have support for the refresher Braille 18, not in HID yet.
Right.
Because I can't seem to get hold of the specs.
Well, it'd be in the exhibit hall. You go looking
that way. Need to harass someone about that.
Right.
But, so aside from those two manufacturers, we haven't really had that much contact. We've done some of the work ourselves.
Sure.
And others have contributed some bits and pieces. I wrote a driver for the BOM displays because I happen to own one.
Mm. Yeah.
So I can test it.
And that's what a lot of this comes down to, is if us as blind users, we can extend this screen reader to do functionality that we have access to. And this is sometimes a problem in terms of, you know, okay, we can write a Braille display driver if we have the Braille display.
Right.
If we don't have the Braille display.
Or if you happen to find another user that has one and knows how to program.
Exactly. Right. That's right. Mm-hmm. But it also comes even down to applications. You know, people might say, you know, we want support for this call center software or something. Well, that's fine, but we're going to have to
get hold of it.
And, you know, in order to do it, it's not magic. You know?
Like, I mean, we have to prioritize and
as well.
Stuff.
That's right.
So. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there is some talk. There is a scripting capability of sorts available. I don't think it's there. I hear some people talk about it. I don't think it's very well known. I need to tell people a little bit about that. How someone could enhance an application.
We've always had, pretty much right from the beginning, some support for developing app modules.
Right, app
so
modules.
Basically, an application specific module or support area. We've really extended that a lot in the last year or so. So now, for example, you can implement... it's always sort of been there, but it's been formalized so that now you can literally override the support for specific controls and do... You know, you've got a lot of control. You can practically do anything you can do in the core now.
Mm-hmm.
We've also recently added support for what we call global plugins, which allow you to implement functionality like that happens everywhere, not just in a single application.
Okay.
The really big advancement, to be honest, is that this is now actually documented, which it wasn't before.
I was just going to ask about that. So you have documentation.
It's not yet on the website,
but we have finished writing it. We've just got to clean it up a little bit, and then we will publish it.
So the documentation is always... There's been some code docs, but, I mean, there's been nothing to get people started, like no tutorial. So we finally now... We put together a tutorial with examples.
And we're getting a lot of feedback from our developer community, you know, on our email.
It's how to describe it,
And it'll only get bigger.
Yeah.
Sure.
So, I mean, hopefully things will really start to move forward. And I think global plugins are something people really have been wanting.
Okay.
So they can do all sorts of funky stuff with it.
Finally, moving forward, what other improvements are you guys planning on for the next few months? Or what's in the queue that you can talk about?
If I sort of go...
I mean, see, there's many sort of, you know, things that because we have many things that we'd like to do. I mean, some of them, you know, automatic language switching, you know, mm-hmm. so detecting language and automatically either switching, you know, the synth language or even, I guess, in the further long road, switching the Braille, what do you call it, Braille table?
Braille table.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to match the language. I guess...
That's pretty long term.
Yeah, that's long term. There's... we always know that there couldn't be improvements to Microsoft Office, etc.
Sure.
Certainly in the performance area.
That's a very, very big job.
It is a very large job. So,
Speaking of the next release,
yeah. mm-hmm.
there are a couple of areas that we can take, and we haven't quite decided on this yet. There's a big push for better punctuation handling,
mm-hmm.
so the ability to actually have more than just on and off.
Okay.
Punctuation, people want, you know, some, most, or none.
Sure.
And the ability to control what goes into each level, the ability to reassign the labels for certain punctuation marks.
Okay.
So there's that. I don't know yet whether that will get into this release.
We're not sure.
I accept
that. But it's being worked on.
Sure.
But there's also one of the things that we're looking at is streamlining the distribution of NVDA. So instead of having a separate portable installer, we're actually wondering whether it would be better to have that embedded as one version, which would also mean that the executable is compressed and it'll uncompress itself off a USB stick, which may actually be faster for portable copies as well. And possibly those changes would also allow us to do automatic updates, but I must stress that I can't say for certain whether that will happen yet.
Yeah. Sure.
So that's probably more short-term. We haven't really worked out yet what this would just sort of come out of the last release, and we're still recovering. And
I also mention we are also looking, with the help of some other people, support for input of Asian characters. We've sort of started to work quite closely with certainly the Chinese community anyway.
Right.
And I know the Japanese community has been very interested in having this support as well. And so we're really trying to... So some people have already contributed some code, so we've got to have a look at it in the next few weeks after we get home and everything, and hopefully we can start integrating that into NVDA soon. So.
Sure. Good. If people want to give suggestions on the future path for NVDA or contact NVDA Access, what's the best way to do that?
All of the information is on our website. We generally encourage people to subscribe to the mailing lists just because it allows us to balance all of that, and other people can answer questions as well. And obviously, for reporting issues, there's information on the website about how to log an issue in our system as well, so that it gets looked after and gets given the attention that it needs. But nvda-project.org, all of the information that you're going to need is up there and fairly easy to get to.
But specifically, if it's related to NV Access, so in regards to funding or, you know, the outlook of the project as a whole, I guess not necessarily NVDA, but what we're doing, you can go to nvaccess.org, and that's all about our organisation.
Awesome. Mick, Jamie, what took us so long? I appreciate it. You guys are coming by. And definitely have to do this again sometime.
Sounds good. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
This has been another exclusive audio podcast from Blind Bargains. Visit blindbargains.com for the latest technology deals, news, and interviews. So long.